The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considered, but we're so damn good. It's the story of your life.
I'm Hugh Hewitt inside my studio, MyReliefFactor.com studio, asking WWTLD. You know what that is? What would Ted Lasso do? I have considered it to be a great week because I've converted many of you to Ted Lasso, but a sad week because Rush died. So I'm taking a couple of calls today. If you didn't get in yesterday to talk about Rush, and you didn't, many of you didn't. I can only take so many calls in the course of 3 hours. I will also take those calls today, 1-800-520-1234. And then if you didn't get in earlier this week when I was talking about Ted Lasso, you can also catch up today at 1-800-520-1234. My question is, who's a Ted Lasso that you know? And I thought about that last night, and I'll tell you in a moment. Let me do the rundown first. NASA dropped a rover onto Mars yesterday. And I mean, nobody told me. And it always raises the Zod problem, right? If you're going to drop anything on anywhere, you run the Zod risk. But they did. And it's really quite the remarkable thing. Because it's called Perseverance, which is a great name. I didn't know the name. No, that's the second thing I didn't know. I didn't know that it was up there. Number two, I didn't know it was named Perseverance. Number three, I didn't know they launched it in July and got there in February, which seems awfully quick to me. All of a sudden, I say, we can get someone up there and back. We can go up and scoop up Zod's remains and bring them back. But then number four, just as an aside, in the Washington Post story about Perseverance, they note Mars is an incredibly difficult place to land on. And I don't know about you, but I didn't know that either. That's like saying the toll road in Orange County, California, which is the Dwayne R. Patterson Memorial Exit. I actually don't know what Dwayne's middle name is. Dwayne, what's your middle name?
Robert.
I was right. Dwayne R. Patterson. It is on the sign. The Dwayne R. Patterson Memorial Exit is a difficult exit to take.
Would you like my Social Security number, too?
Let's only put out the four digits so people can pretend to be you. But if you drive past the Dwayne R. Patterson Memorial Exit, there's no exit there. That's where Dwayne took his Trans Am to the bottom of the ditch and somehow survived. But like, that's not an easy
place. It was hard to land on that, too.
That's what made me think of it when I read that this hard to land on Mars, and it's hard to get off the toll road where Dwayne did. But they did it. So bravo, NASA. And we're just not even going to think about Zod. Secondly, the biggest story of the day on this planet, that's the biggest story of the day on all other planets, is down under in Australia. And again, I try and keep up with the news. That's my job. I read 7 newspapers every morning. I go about this every morning. And yesterday afternoon, I began to read from the Times of Israel, and then the Financial Times, and then the Telegraph, and then in the Wall Street Journal. Well, I will just start with the Times of Israel. Headwave. Shockwaves worldwide as Facebook turns off the news for Australia. Then in the Financial Times. Big tech versus journalism. Publishers watch Australia fight with bated breath. Then from the Telegraph. We're not in the United States yet. This is just international media. Arrogant Facebook is trying to intimidate us over news ban, says Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. So I'm up and I am, what is going on down under? Scott Morrison, by the way, great, great, great leader of the free world. He's going to help Joe Biden stay propped up, even though the third story of the morning is they're falling apart over there. Let me tell you that, too. U.S. officials to attend negotiations on Iran's nuclear program. U.S. said that from the Financial Times. From the Times of Israel, U.S. says it's ready to restart talks with Iran on its nuclear program. Wall Street Journal, U.S. says it would meet for nuclear talks with Iran, other powers. And that's not good. That's the beginning of the collapse of American foreign policy. Everything good. Donald Trump, Mike Pompeo, Robert O'Brien got done. Everything good. Jim Mattis, when he was Secretary of Defense, it's all going to be gone. Honestly, I know we're going to wake up one day and we're going to see Wendy Sherman flanked by John Kerry and Susan Rice announcing that Iran will be allowed nuclear ICBMs in 4 years. And China, we are recognizing the 9-dash line in exchange for their both committing to carbon reductions in 2080. That's a Wendy Sherman deal. She's done that before with North Korea in 1994 and with Iran at the end of the Obama years. So it's just going to be a Kerry to Rice to Sherman triple play. And it's happening so fast. It's in 1 month. They're giving up all the leverage that it took Team Trump to build, especially Mike Pompeo, in 4 years. Jared Kushner, all gone. But elections have come. It's not a surprise. He said he was going to do it. Not a surprise. Wouldn't be fair to say that's a surprise. Some good news. Some very, very good news. The vaccines are working at a phenomenal rate, and the numbers are falling at a phenomenal rate. Now, some unusual news is Great Britain announced they're launching a green pass for those who are vaccinated, and they will jail people who fraudulently show a green pass. And the green pass will allow you to do things like travel. It's a good idea. We're going to need it. And the best news, the virus death fatality rate for people over 80 has just plummeted. Finally, I want to play James Bo Snerdly Golden on Fox last night, remembering Rush. Nobody worked more with Rush than Bo. It's like Dwayne, who has 1 week longer with me than Adam. And if I get hit by a bus and one of my affiliates,
I get to be the one going on TV to remember you.
It scares the hell out of me.
It should.
We'll see what Bo Snerdly had to say. Cut number one.
You know, Sean, we can't wrap our arms around this. We can't wrap our brains and our hearts around it, that our beloved Rush has returned his talent to God. And we are so thankful for him. You know, Rush is, to me, a second-generation founding father. This went beyond radio. This went beyond politics. What Rush did for America, one man changed so many trajectories in this country. When Rush began his career, there were 1,200 radio stations roughly doing the talk radio format. Today, there are over 12,000. The number of print conservative publications, very few. Today, it's a flourishing market. There was no Fox TV. There was nowhere on TV that you could get conservative ideology, that you could get the values that represent what most Americans believe until Rush. He changed the media. He changed the landscape. Rush Limbaugh's radio show grew for over 30 years. This is unheard of. And our audience, from small children all the way up through the senior of senior citizens. And beyond all of those accomplishments, Rush Limbaugh was one of the finest human beings that you would ever want to meet. A generous, wonderful, beautiful spirit, humble, a gentleman, always, never failed to thank people for the smallest service that they could do to him, never looked down on people. It burns me to my soul when people sully his reputation with falsehoods, calling him a racist. This man was just an incredible phenomenon. And we love you, Rush. God bless you. And thank you, Sean, for having me with you to talk about Rush.
You know, nobody better than Bo Snerdly, who's a great gentleman himself and such a great radio professional. Your phone call's coming up, 1-800-520-1234. Is there a Ted Lasso that you know? And really, if you have a Rush comment still, I'd love to hear from you. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you this. There has never been a more important time to protect your digital rights. That's why I and thousands of my patriotic listeners choose to secure our online data by using ExpressVPN. Do you believe that a VPN isn't for you because you can use the internet just fine without one? Anytime you go online, my friends, your internet service provider can see every site you are visiting. You think that VPNs are complex and only for tech experts? No, they're not. Trust me. With ExpressVPN, you launch the app, tap one button to protect yourself, and it's done. It's that simple. I trust ExpressVPN to protect my online data because they're rated number one by CNET and Wired, and they stand for my values. So now is the time for you to take a stance. Take back your privacy at expressvpn.com/Hewitt. You get 3 extra months for on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get 3 extra months free. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now.
Because I come from the land of liberty.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. What would Ted Lasso do? A couple of New York Times reporters did a double drive-by on me yesterday. And one of them, Jonathan Martin, he and I have clashed over the years. And by clash, I simply mean we have disagreements. John thinks I'm a fraud and a terrible journalist. And I have a shtick about the media being biased and we've had words, but not in public, at the Stanford Media Hoover's Fellow. And so I've invited him on the show. He never wants to come on. His colleagues come on, but that's okay. I know that Jonathan is actually a biased reporter, and I reported that. So yesterday, in a story that's got nothing to do with me, he says, cutting legs out from the, it's about Nikki Haley. Cutting legs out from the, it's the media demanding Trump loyalty tests, not, you know, Trump himself, in a way that recalls when Trump advisors or Hugh Hewitt would do the he doesn't really mean it bit for Trump himself to only say, no, I mean it. Now, of course, I never did that bit. Jonathan knows or should have known that he's, I think, referring to the time that the president interviewed with me before he was president on air, and he said Obama created ISIS. And I said, surely you mean that Obama withdrew the troops from Iraq and created a vacuum into which ISIS came, and the president came back and said, no, Obama created ISIS, made a lot of news. It was funny, and it was not funny. It was vintage Trump. But I didn't say he didn't mean it. I said, you must mean this. It was a question to follow. So, John, it's a smear, right? It's a drive-by media smear, to quote Rush. So what would Ted Lasso do? He'd say, come on, John, you can do better. Lose the Jamie Tartt attitude towards anyone from the center right. So come on, Jonathan, you can do better. Lose that Jamie. Just what would Ted Lasso do? Martha in Winchester, Virginia. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning. R.I.P. Rush. Oh, my goodness. I listened to him for almost 30 years, and it's not that he was an icon. It's that he was so spot on. He saw things before many people did.
Oh, he converted a lot of people because of that, and he made sense out of dots, and he invented language. I just used a Rushism, the drive-by media.
Oh, yeah.
He invented that.
Oh, and you said yesterday that he had given you a compliment that you were the best interviewer on radio, and I have a little tiny bone to pick with you, that yesterday your second-to-last caller mentioned that a lot of people, he started off saying that people would misquote or misrepresent something he said or tell something out of context that he had said and then attack him for that. And then you said, well, he made mistakes, da-da-da-da-da. No, it was about being misquoted and being misrepresented.
No, that I think actually it wasn't. I think it was response to a – I know what you're referring to. And I was looking at the Wikipedia – excuse me, at the New York Times obit at that very moment, and they had cataloged the controversies into which Rush had stepped over 30 years. And I was referring specifically to those controversies. I don't want to talk about them. I don't think it's appropriate when you're honoring the dead. But go read the New York Times obit. You'll see what I'm talking about. And they didn't misquote him in those instances. He made mistakes for which he apologized. And by the way, in 30 years, Martha, in 30 years, you're going to do that.
Yeah.
So that's you don't have a bone to pick with me. You don't have a bone to pick with me. You're just thinking I'm not making it up. Go read the New York Times thing. I appreciate it, and then call me back. I want to get one more in. Tony Marie in Arizona. 45 seconds, Tony Marie.
Well, I adored Rush. I was introduced to him in 1990 by my sister, and then in 1991 when I went on maternity leave from my dad's business because I was in preterm labor, I became a stay-at-home mom, and for the next 4 years, I had babies. And all these years later, I'm still at home with a 17-year-old who adores Rush, who listened to all the Rush Revere books and read all the Rush Revere books.
A Rush baby.
And I have 5 Rush babies. And
high compliment.
He was my teacher. He was my friend. He was, he helped me form my political thought.
We got, Tony Marie, thank you. 1-800-520-1234, it's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. That music means it's time for Sonny Bunch, who you can follow on Twitter at Sonny Bunch. You can also watch the podcast, listen to the podcast, left, right, and center aisle, Sonny and other critics. And Sonny, I want to begin today with a huge Sonny Bunch compliment.
Mm.
Ted Lasso is magnificent, and you told me to watch it. And I've spent all week converting people to Ted Lasso, and I want to ask you now that I've seen it, without spoilers for people, why do you think people who see it love it so much? And they do. They become Lasso heads.
It is a movie, or I'm sorry, it is a TV show that is earnestly optimistic and decent And it's nice without being cloying or saccharine. And I think that that is something that we are all looking for at this particular moment in time in America and in the world, is something that is just nice and decent.
I agree. And I would add to it, what would Ted Lasso do, WWTDL, is because he is indomitable and he is kind. And I call myself the Ted Lasso of talk radio, not for the kind part, but for just going on for 20 years. But there are Ted Lassos in everybody's life. I'm going to do a bit on a little bit later about an athletic director at my high school for 47 years. Never said a bad word to anyone. A guy named John Gillen in Warren, Ohio. There are Ted Lassos all around. They never get any ink.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a different sort of TV show for sure. You know, it's not cynical. It's not mean-spirited in any way.
And it's not PG-13. It's R.
Yeah, I mean, it's an R-rated show. I mean, it's for language.
Not for pornography. Not for the exposed flesh.
Just nudity or anything like that.
Innuendo, sexual talk. Yep.
Just a lot of cursing. Just some F-bombs.
Adult humor.
But it is very much a show. Again, it's a show about a decent guy who is trying to help evolve. You know, I think I can't remember if I described it to you this way exactly, but he is not a sports coach, really. He's a life coach.
Yes, you did say that, and you are right.
He's a guy who is just out there trying to make everybody better, you know, either feel better about themselves or to be better people or
and
whatever.
Everybody except one person gets better, Sonny. The ex-owner doesn't get better.
Yeah, well, he's the actual true villain of the show, right? You know, the way the show is set up, for people who haven't seen it, the show is set up. Ted Lasso is hired by the ex-wife of the previous owner of the club who now owns it after the divorce. She has hired Ted Lasso to destroy the team because it's the only thing the ex-husband loves. And it's kind of like Major League, right? If you've seen the movie Major
yep,
League.
It's baseball, absolutely a knockoff of Major League. I've seen it like 1,000 times. Yeah, it's about the Indians.
Right, and that's the setup, but it's not a knockoff of Major League because you
not
realize as it goes along that, you know, the woman owner is not actually – she is hurting inside and she needs Ted Lasso's help as much as anybody on the team. The real villain is the ex-owner, Rupert or whatever his name is. He is the one who is set up to be the big bad, and I think it's done really well. I mean, I really think the everyone who watches this show enjoys it. I haven't heard from anybody who I've recommended it to who has been like, ugh, Ted Lasso.
And when you told me about it, I didn't possibly think I could like it given the setting. And we won't say anything more, but I don't think anyone's not going to like it. I think everyone's going to love it. What's new, Sonny Bunch?
New this week is Nomadland.
Oh, Francis McDormand. Tell me.
Yeah. So Nomadland is getting lots of award season buzz. It's getting a lot of critical praise from the critics groups. It stars Francis McDormand, who people will probably best know from Fargo as the police chief there. She is a woman who lives in a town, the town of Empire, Nevada, which in a title card, as the movie begins, we learn is a place where a gypsum plant shut down after the Great Recession. People didn't need, you know, what they were making there. And the town of Empire, the zip code for it was discontinued. I didn't even know this was a thing that could happen. I did not know that, you know, zip codes could just disappear.
Did you know that Perseverance was landing on Mars yesterday? Did anyone tell you?
I did. I did know that.
I didn't know that. And did you know that, as the Washington Post reported, that it's very difficult to land on Mars?
That sounds right.
I didn't know that. I mean, why would it be more difficult than the moon? And they explained it finally, but I didn't know that.
Well, it's much further. Well, got a lot of more variables and ins and outs and what have you.
They got cliffs. It's sort of like landing in Aspen versus landing in Denver. But anyway, you were saying about this, things that you did not know.
Right. So I did not know. I did not know that zip codes could just disappear and be discontinued and towns could disappear. Anyway, Frances McDormand plays this woman, Fern, who the plant is closed. Her husband has died. She decides that she, you know, doesn't want to live in this town anymore. She can't really afford it. So she puts her stuff in storage, moves into a van, and starts kind of traveling the country, working odd jobs across it, going where the work is as the seasons pass along. She becomes a nomad. She becomes a nomad. She is the nomad of nomad land. And there is a whole subculture of people who do this. Now, there are two ways to look at this. One is this is a economic necessity brought about by, poverty or whatever, right? It's a form of homelessness. Or you can look at it as there is, and this is true, I know a guy who lives this way, there is an actual subculture of people who live in their vans and travel the country, and they do this because it's cheap, because it's efficient, and because they can see the country. They can move, they can go and see, you know, the Grand Canyon one week, Badlands the next month, et cetera, et cetera. And it's easier to live that sort of life now, especially if you have a sort of intellectual style job where you can spend most of your time writing and that sort of thing. These people, the people in this movie, Frances McDormand and the people she discovers on the road, are not writers and artists and that sort of thing. They go around the country working odd jobs. As the movie starts, Fern is working in an Amazon warehouse. And one of the things I like about this movie, and I like a fair number of things about this movie, but one of the things I like about this movie is that it treats the people who work in an Amazon warehouse with a lot of dignity. It treats the actual work of working in an Amazon warehouse with dignity and as something that people do because they need work and they make friends there. And it doesn't hammer home this idea. In a lesser sort of movie, you know, the people who work at an Amazon warehouse would be oppressed and they would be, you know, mistreated and they would be miserable with their lives and their jobs. But the people who work at the Amazon warehouse here, they're just excited to have work. They wish that the seasonal nature of the job, you know, they're hired as surplus labor really for the winter rush. They're sad when that season ends and they don't have the gig there anymore. This is not like an exceptionally political movie is what I'm saying. It's not a movie about, you know, the way capitalism destroys.
I'm looking forward to seeing that because I saw your tweet about it and I thought, okay, Sonny's on target here. I'm going to watch that. Now, tell me one more, because I debuted a podcast today. The interview where I do long form interviews with people, not the 10 minutes that you and I are doing, promoting a podcast in the podcast forest is hard to do unless you have a radio show. And I can tell people to go find the interview with Hugh Hewitt and I can go tell people to go find Left, Right and Center Aisle with Sonny Bunch. How is
Hugh? It's across the movie aisle. It's across the movie aisle. That's what it's called.
Once told me it was based on Left, Right, and Center. That's
it. Yeah. It's the elevator pitch is Left, Right, and Center, but for the movies.
Okay, so it's across the aisle?
Across the movie aisle. Across the movie aisle.
Okay, you say it seven times in Frank Lunch.
Across the movie aisle, people. Yeah. Just go to Apple, look for Across the Movie Aisle.
How do you promote that? Because I think people love movie talk, and they don't get enough of it because, as every radio talk show host will tell you, people turn off movies or they turn on movies, but they don't. You can lose a lot of audience when you talk about movies. So how do people find Across the Movie Aisle?
Well, I mean, it helps having you have your radio show to promote it. I have my Twitter feed to promote it. You know, I've got 60-some thousand followers on Twitter. That's a good way to get people to listen. And the nice thing about podcasts is you don't actually need to have a huge audience to have a successful podcast. I mean, I was looking at numbers. They're a couple years old now, but you know, 80% of podcasts. Well, I mean, it's like what's the law of heavy users, right? 90% of shows do 10% of the listens, and 10% of the shows do 90% of the listens. It's the same basic power or order of powers or whatever that
is. Like fundraising in colleges, it used to be 20% of the alumni donated 80% of the money. It's now down to 5% of the
right. And you know, alcohol users, the problem 10% drink 90% of the alcohol, right? That like it's that sort of thing.
Whoa,
like
that. So is that true?
If you need, it's a number something like that. Yeah,
whoa.
It's like the well.
It's like Grant.
I want to say it's something like 20% of drinkers drink 80% of the alcohol, or some number like that. It's some absurd figure.
So you've got two podcasts, Across the Movie Aisle and The Bulwark Goes to the Movie. So we got a minute left.
Yeah, The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. Yeah,
Bulwark goes. So I got both names wrong in one segment. So that's really.
Okay. It's okay. But anyway, both those shows do. You know, they don't do a million downloads, but they do enough downloads to be successful in their respective spheres.
So my question was which does better, the Pure Sunny Bunch or the Three Critics?
I would say Across the Movie Aisle is probably more popular. But again, you have more avenues of promotion there, right? You have my Twitter feed, Alyssa's Twitter feed, Peter's Twitter feed. You've got we're talking about new movies that are out each week, and that show, like every other movie show, does better when we have stuff that's actually coming out every week. It's one reason why I wish movies would come back in a real way.
They're coming soon, Sunny Bunch, and I leave everyone with go find Across the Movie Aisle or The Bulwark Goes to the Movie with Sunny Bunch. Follow Sunny on Twitter at Sunny Bunch, and it's easier. Thank you, Sunny. Thank you for Ted Lasso, especially. Coming right back with Tarzana Joe. I'm joined now by the Poet Laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Good Friday to you, Joe.
Good Friday to you, Hugh. Time for some radio reflections. In my youth, I loved Gene Shepherd, and he entertained me greatly. And you know who on the radio I'm tuning into lately. So if I could do anything, I think my second choice would be listening attentive to the broadcast human voice. TV is entertaining and engaging, yes, it's true, but it doesn't hold a candle to what radio can do. It's the single greatest medium that's ever been designed. It's instructive. It's enraging. It's a theater of the mind. And unlike a motion picture or some dull poetic readings, the listener in radio is part of the proceedings. So when you lose a man by whom the medium was made, it calls for much reflection, and attention should be paid. The pleasure from the left at his departure couldn't be greater. They called him a pariah and a bigot and a hater. But he stood inside the kitchen because he loved to take the heat. And I've heard he was the kindest man that you might ever meet. He believed in this America and all that it aspired to, expressing his opinions in the way that he desired to. He sold 1 billion products in his 30-something years, started countless platforms and uncountable careers. A cuddly, fuzzy teddy bear, a rousing, raging bull. After years of gratitude, God's loan is paid in full.
That's very nice, Joe.
By Tarzana Joe.
That is just very nice. God's loan is paid on loan from God. You're absolutely right. What a wonderful way to close the week, Joe. That will be posted at TarzanaJoe.com.
Yes, sir.
Have you survived the Valentine's Day blitz?
Yes, I did. And the new blitz is on. I think, again, a new wave of weddings is starting.
I thought it was St. Patrick's Day poems. No, so everyone who has a St. Patrick's Day. You've only had one?
In my career, a St. Patrick's Day poem. I don't think people, you know, are ready to listen to poetry in the pub. I don't know why.
Oh, now, wait a minute. I've been in a lot of Irish bars, and they're all poets.
Maybe it's the best audience now. I think so.
I think if someone's throwing a St. Paddy's Day party and they want to bring a tear to the eye, just commission Joe and then claim you. I mean, you don't mind if people steal your work, do you, Joe?
Well, have a wee dram on me, yes.
Yeah, all right, my friend. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com to write to him. And to read everything that Joe writes, go to TarzanaJoe.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Hugh.
Now, I was saying that next hour we're going to talk with the next governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, and Eliana Johnson. And then Michael Shear is going to join us, and Molly Hemingway is going to join us, and we'll talk about Russian politics and stuff like that. But I have one question. You can call about Rush, or you can call about Ted Lasso. But you'll know a Ted Lasso if you've seen it. I went and looked up the obituary for John Gillen last night, because when I thought about this, I thought of John Gillen. If you're from Warren, Ohio, you'll know him. If you don't know him, you'll know him from this obit. John D. Gillen, 84, passed away peacefully after a short and courageous battle with cancer. He was born November 5, 1932 in Warren, Ohio, the son of the late Peter and Sarah Gillen. He was a 1950 graduate of Warren St. Mary's High School, where he lettered in football. He attended Carroll College in Montana, where he played football for 2 years and transferred to Youngstown State University, where he graduated with a bachelor's degree in education. He obtained his master's in education from Westminster College. He taught for 57 years, starting at St. Mary's High School and continuing at John F. Kennedy High School, where he coached a variety of sports and was also the athletic director for the past 47 years. His dedication and love of his school was valued by many as he was inducted into the Trumbull County Hall of Fame, Warren Sports Hall of Fame, John F. Kennedy Hall of Fame, and in 2012 was honored to have the gymnasium at JFK be named the Gillen Gymnasium. John served in the U.S. Army as a medic in Korea. He had a strong faith, it isn't in here, but he was a daily mass attendee, and was a lifelong member of St. Mary's Church, where he also served as an usher. He's survived by his wife, Gloria, whom he married on July 31, 1965. This is from when he died in 2017, so 35 and 17, 52 years. And four children, John Gillen of Streetsboro, Annie now needs of Helena, Montana, Brian Gillen of Greenville, North Carolina, and Jamie Gillen of Austin Town. Four grandchildren, Matthew, Ian, and Maggie Needs, and Ivan Gillen. He is preceded in death by his parents, a son, Thomas Joseph Gillen, and a brother, Charles Gillen. Family and friends may call on such and such a day. And at the end, he said, in lieu of flowers, contribution may be made in John's name to John F. Kennedy Athletic Department. He was the first Ted Lasso. Everybody knew Coach Gillen, and that's what you called him. He was Coach Gillen. And even if you weren't particularly great at any sport, and that would include this host, Gillen would grab you, and he figured out I could work my way around a math table. I scheduled the Mahoning Valley Conference in about a half hour in his office. He said, you could be an AD someday. And I said, actually, I don't think so, Coach. Everybody loved John Gillen because he made everybody better. That's the secret of Ted Lasso. That's why you want to watch it this weekend. And that's why you want to come back next hour of the show, 1-800-520-1234. It's Friday on a week that I've got totally screwed up. Both the fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I missed appointments left, right, and center because we always thought it was a different day. That's what happens when you take Monday off instead of Friday. Stay tuned, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.